Welcome back to Run the List, a medical education podcast in internal medicine. As a quick disclaimer, this podcast is made for educational and informational purposes only and should not be understood as medical advice under any circumstances. Before we get to the show, a quick word on the sponsors for today's episode.
This episode is brought to you by Open Evidence. Open Evidence is a really incredible resource for people in medicine. It's an AI-powered medical information platform that can help you answer clinical questions, provide high-quality literature, and so much more. You can ask questions like, what are the classic imaging findings for gout? Or, tell me about the landmark trials in lupus nephritis. They recently partnered with the New England Journal of Medicine, so they have access to their text, figures, and tables within Open Evidence. It's free and unlimited for healthcare professionals, so I highly encourage you to go check it out. Go to openevidence.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Run the List. I am Ali Shibi, a current third-year medical student at Harvard and a recent member of the RTL team. I am back with Dr. Kumar, a gastroenterologist at Brigham and Women's Hospital and one of the co-founders of RTL, for part two of our series on SIBO. Today, we will be tackling how to diagnose SIBO.
Thank you, Ali. I am super excited to be back for this second episode. Let's not waste any time and let's just go ahead and run the list.
Awesome. To review, SIBO is due to a pathological increase in bacteria in the small bowel, often presenting with postprandial abdominal bloating and diarrhea. In part one of this series, we reviewed the risk factors for SIBO, which included altered motility, altered anatomy, and reduced stomach acid. Returning to our case, Ms. R is a 45-year-old female with a history of obesity, status post Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, who presents to primary care clinic with 2 months of worsening bloating, flatulence, and diarrhea. She reports abdominal distension is present upon waking up and worsens after meals. You are concerned that she has underlying SIBO given her symptoms and post-surgical anatomy. Dr. Kumar, how can we confirm that this patient has SIBO?
That is a great question, Ali. There are two different ways to diagnose SIBO formally. The first is to directly measure the amount of bacteria in the small intestine via aspiration of duodenal or jejunal contents and upper endoscopy. But as you can imagine, this is very time intensive and also resource intensive as it can only happen during a procedure, and thus this is not routinely performed. The much more common mode of diagnosis is instead done through a lactulose breath test, which can be done in the office.
Great. Breath testing sounds much more convenient and cost effective. How does the breath test work, and what is the pathophysiology behind this test that can diagnose SIBO?
That's an excellent question, Ali. There are four key steps in breath testing for SIBO that I want to go through with you right now. So the first one is that the patient, upon arrival, consumes a carbohydrate substrate in the office, and typically this is in the form of a dose of lactulose, and after fasting since midnight. Once that lactulose is in the GI tract and traveling through, it reaches the intestine, and in the intestine, bacteria will metabolize the lactulose, and in the process, they release hydrogen and/or methane gas. That gas that's released by the bacteria is then absorbed into the bloodstream and expired or exhaled through the lungs. Now, what happens next is the breath test machine can detect the hydrogen and/or methane that is exhaled, and current guidelines do recommend measuring for both gases because the treatment, which we'll talk about in a subsequent episode, is different based on the profile of gas elevation. Now, if the gas levels do reach a certain threshold within a set number of time, then the test is positive and we formally diagnose the patient with SIBO.
Cool. So it takes advantage of the fact that the bacteria in the gut produce gas. So elevated hydrogen or methane levels suggest that there's more bacterial growth in the GI tract than there should be. What are the threshold parameters for a positive test?
That's exactly right, Ali. There is a North American consensus for the following criteria for SIBO that I'm going to go over with you right now. So the first criteria is a rise in the exhaled hydrogen of 20 or more ppms above the baseline level within 90 minutes. If that occurs, then the test is positive for SIBO by hydrogen criteria. The second criteria is if the methane levels that are exhaled are above or equal to 10 ppm, and that's at any time during the test. Again, the test takes a total of 120 minutes, And so if at any point during that test, typically gas levels are measured every 15 minutes. If at any point they're above 10 ppm, then that test is positive for SIBO based on methanogen production or methane levels. If either of these criteria are met, the diagnosis of SIBO can be made. And there are various patterns that we can see because there's two criteria. You may be positive just for hydrogen levels. You can also be positive just for methane levels, or you can have mixed hydrogen and methane positivity.
Got it. As we discussed in our last episode, we expect there to be loads of physiological bacteria in the colon, which will also produce hydrogen and methane. If the patient has a really fast GI transit, could there be risk of a false positive of SIBO breath testing?
Absolutely. In that case, the expired gas may actually be coming from bacteria in the large intestine or the colon, which, as we've discussed, would be a very normal thing to occur. The bacteria is very predominant in the large intestine. And so if the patient has fast transit where the lactulose is reaching the large intestine within that 2-hour time window, seeing a peak in the gas levels would make you think the patient has SIBO when actually the bacteria are present in the large intestine. So that's why I always like to look at the actual gas concentrations over time of the test and see if there is this phenomenon called the double peak of hydrogen and or methane over the course of the test. What that means is that there's an initial peak that you see in the test within the first 60 minutes or so on average, and then the gas levels come down only to rise again at the very end of the test. Now, if you see two peaks, you know that the first peak originated from the small intestine just because it is proximal to the large intestine, and that the second peak is from the colon where that would be arising from normal colon flora. So looking at the actual gas levels and the trend of the gas levels over the course of the test can be very helpful to diagnose SIBO and feel more confident that the rise in gas levels is coming from the small intestine rather than the large intestine.
That makes sense. Are there any other considerations that should be reviewed with the patient prior to testing to make sure that the testing is accurate?
Yes, absolutely. So as you brought up how the rate of GI transit can influence the results of the test, the main thing to think about are what are the different variables that could be impacting the outcomes of the test, namely motility and the presence of bacterial flora. So when we think about the rate of GI transit and the bacterial flora in our patients, we should counsel them to avoid a few things before having them undergo the test. So the typical recommendations we make are as follows. So no antibiotics within 4 weeks, right? Because that would potentially clear the bacterial flora from the intestine, namely the small intestine where we are testing for it. No prokinetic drugs such as metoclopramide or prucalopride within 1 week of the test, because that's going to influence the transit time during testing. No fermentable foods within 24 hours. Those fermentable foods will be more likely to produce the hydrogen and or methane gas levels. So when patients come in and we do the test and they have very high gas levels to start, that suggests that they consumed a highly fermentable food within the past 24 hours, and that would make the test less accurate, more likely to be a false positive. And then lastly, as we mentioned before, the patients do need to come in fasting for 8 to 12 hours before the test to make sure that the test is most accurate.
Awesome. We covered a lot of material in today's episode in terms of testing and making the diagnosis of SIBO. Before we go, can you summarize the most important takeaways for our listeners?
Absolutely. So number one is that lactulose breath testing is the preferred diagnostic test for SIBO, as is both safe and non-invasive. Number two is the lactulose breath test will measure both hydrogen and methane gas ideally, which will be important in terms of deciding on a treatment plan. There are some tests that only measure one of the two gas levels, and it's really helpful to have both gas levels measured because that's going to influence the treatment, as we'll discuss in our next and final episode on SIBO. Lastly, number three, remember to counsel your patients on the steps they need to take before the exam. Remember, the rate of transit of the GI system and the presence of bacterial flora are the two main factors in producing a positive or negative test. So anything that's going to influence those two variables needs to be controlled. And that's why we say no antibiotics within the past 4 weeks of an exam and no pro-motility agents within 1 week.
Thank you, Dr. Kumar, for joining me to discuss making the diagnosis of SIBO. We will be back soon for our final installment of the 3-part SIBO series, reviewing treatment.
Thanks so much, Allie. It was a pleasure talking about testing. And as you said, we will be back shortly with our final episode on how do we actually treat SIBO once it's been confirmed.